My name is Emily Wells, and the PAD taught me how to be a collaborator.
Hello, and welcome to just the second episode of the Performing Arts Department PAD podcast. My name is Rob Morgan. I teach design in the Performing Arts Department at Washington University in St. Louis. Today's guest is Emily Wells. Emily Wells is an artistic director, just the fourth artistic director in the history of the Human Race Theater Company in Dayton, Ohio. We talk a little bit about her role there, and she has quite a bit of experience at Houston Grand Opera. And then before that, she was at my former artistic home, Portland Center Stage in Portland, Oregon. We also talk about, of course, her time here at WashU. So I'm very, very excited, very, very honored that Emily Wells took the time to talk to me on the podcast today. So enjoy. Let's get started just kind of asking you a little bit about how you found your way to WashU and, you know, what you studied while you were here in lovely, at the moment today, a bit overcast St. Louis, Missouri.
Absolutely. I grew up in New England, right outside of Providence. And when it was time to go to college, I looked a little bit of all over. I knew theater was going to be a very important part of my college studies. I thought at the time, like so many of us, that I was going to be on stage, be an actor, musical theater actor, all of it, because I had been doing a lot of that through junior high and high school in Rhode Island. So I was looking for a school that had a really strong theater program. I also had a really strong love of language. And so WashU's language department and the diversity of languages that I was able to study was really attractive as well. That didn't go so far because my first semester I took Russian as my first other language outside of French.
Yes.
And was doing about 30 hours a week between class time, language lab time, study time, and still got a B minus. So considering most of the people that go to WashU are a little bit of academic achievers and overachievers, the B minus for the amount of work that I was doing was very disappointing.
But those
were the two things that I was really looking for in a school. And I had probably about seven applications in, some that were closer to home in Rhode Island, and then one famous rival up in Chicago and St. Louis. And when I visited all of these campuses, I just fell in love with WashU, the facilities there. I felt really heard when I had the opportunity to talk with Henry Schwey, who was the chair of the department at the time, and validated all of my experiences. You know, this is something we talk about a lot now. Back then, we didn't really identify that as a thing, but I felt heard and seen and important for all of the things that I had done up until that point.
Nice.
Which was really important for me. And I loved St. Louis. It was a really interesting city to me. It was very different from the sort of smaller city that I grew up in, Rhode Island. And I was ready for a big change. So WashU, here I came.
Yeah, nice. And you studied, did you come away with a major in drama or minor in drama? Or
yes,
how did that work out?
It was a major in drama. I think technically my diploma right there says technical theater, uh-huh. But I did everything. I took both levels of directing. I took theater history and literature and acting classes and all of the design and tech classes.
Sure.
In fact, Anna Pileggi called me one semester, I think it was my sophomore year, and she said, "I've lost my stage manager. Can you stage manage? I think you can do it." And I said, "I've never done it, but sure." And so I stage managed the Seagull, which was on the main stage, and huge set changes and big cast. And I remember that was kind of like a defining moment in
sure.
my time at WashU. There's a couple that I can think of, but that was one of them that someone there saw something in me that I didn't know that I could do and Aww. Gave me the opportunity to do it.
Nice. I often, for those that'll listen to me, and it's not always my students, I like to say that being a teacher, I can sum up my teaching philosophy in three words: make hope visible. And I stole that from a designer named Bruce Mao, but it's so true. It's, you know, I can't take you there on this journey, but I see potential in you to do, if you take this class and meet that person and do that internship, you can be where you want to be. So I'm so glad that Anna saw that in you and others, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure she did. And I really appreciated the nudge in that direction. It was a natural fit for somebody who is very organized and pragmatic, mm-hmm. and which I've always thought of myself as those things.
Yeah.
So it was a nice way to be involved, even though I wasn't getting cast in shows. It was fine because I was really, really busy. And I think that was one of the great parts about the first couple of years.
Nice.
So yeah, major in drama. I didn't find until my junior year, which I wish I would have sooner, anthropology.
Oh, yeah.
Through doing some of those general education requirements and sure. things like that, there was a class about mound builder culture that really focused on Cahokia Mounds, which is right across the river, but then mm-hmm. lots of other mound building spaces around the nation, which kind of blew my mind in terms of the indigenous people in this country and what they were capable of in, 50,000 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow.
So it's really, really extraordinary. So had I found that set of classes sooner, I might have done a minor in anthropology, which...
Sure.
I don't know how I would use that now, but I'm sure I would figure it out.
I don't know why it stopped you, because I've had students come to me like second semester, junior year saying, I want to major in drama. And I look at their credits. And I'm like, there's no chance. How are you going to? And they're like, I can do it.
Like, I do remember that the credit hours required for the BA in theater are like Herculean.
They are.
Especially I had most of my friends, I had a lot of friends in the department, but then I had a lot of friends that were not in the theater department, who were in physics and engineering and all of those things. And I was looking at my list of required classes and their list of required classes. I was like, I should have a degree in engineering by now.
Indeed. So post WashU, where did your journey take you? Did you go straight to a master's program, or did you spend
some time? I did not. I got my equity card right out of college and started stage managing right away for a small theater company that was in St. Louis, and did a summer there and then went on the road.
Oh, nice.
I started touring with children's theater, which for young stage managers is a really great way to learn problem-solving skills. For young actors, it's a terrific way to learn how to be with a group of people for a long time and how to do a show 100 times, sometimes at 8 o'clock in the morning when you were in the van until 10 o'clock the night before and you still have to get up and give 100% to the kids.
Yeah.
It was a really, really great training ground. In that first year, I also participated in the USITT Stage Management Mentorship Project.
Nice.
Which as a new graduate was still available to me. So through that, I met up with a mentor, Robert Cohen in New York, who is a longtime Broadway stage manager, event manager, venue manager. He worked at the Tropicana in Atlantic City for a while. And they matched me with him as a mentor. And that kind of cracked open my stage management career professionally.
Yeah.
And so I moved to New York.
Nice.
And was an assistant stage manager on a Broadway production by the time I was 23.
That's amazing.
So, yeah.
Nice.
So it was really, really great. I did a national tour. I did a bunch of things around that and then came back to New York and was freelancing. And one of the things about freelancing at that time was as soon as people knew that you were a stage manager and you were good at it, they started passing your name around because there was a very, very short list of folks in New York that were good, professional, good personality, great to work with, and things like that. So I kind of made it onto that list and started doing a lot of off-Broadway work and would often have my season booked a year ahead of time.
Sure.
So, 'cause once the directors were picked, they either said, please hire Emily, or the company that recommended me to the director, and that was it. So, so that was kind of 10 years freelancing in New York, making it all happen.
Right,
which is pretty amazing.
Yes, it is.
It was a really sweet time. It was right before there was a housing bubble burst in 2008. So it was right before that time. There were a lot of shows in New York.
Yep.
I subbed on Broadway for a couple things, Jersey Boys and Matthew Bourne's Swan Lake, which was extraordinary. And just being around all of that environment was magical. I feel really lucky to have had that time.
We've had a number of alumni sort of follow in the Emily Wells tracks, as you might say. And one in particular is guest speaking virtually in my class next week, Sarah Azizo. Yeah. She's doing some shows at Lincoln Center. She's just killing it in New York. So we're really happy
for her.
That's
wonderful.
So yeah, I think you're right. There's a lot that WashU teaches you that makes you a valuable commodity in that environment, mm-hmm. in that community. So. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so moving on from that, what I find this is sort of an interesting question or different, should I say different answer from everybody. What mm-hmm. prompted you to say, I'd like to get a master's? Like what once you're on that track in Broadway and off Broadway and really doing well, sometimes you, I guess, have some thoughts that, I think I want to go get my master's. What was that trigger for you?
For me, it was a couple things. I had always had a love of directing from high school through to college, and knew that I hadn't yet reached the edges of my potential and what I could do in theater.
Yeah.
And so it was not easy to figure out where I wanted to go, because I loved New York. I had been there for 10 years. So it was a gradual process. I think it took me about 3 years to find the right fit for a program, which is key, in my opinion.
Of course, yeah.
Because you really need to know, especially going back after time in the field and working, you have to know what it is that you want to get out of it. It's mm-hmm. not just because, well, I don't want to go into the workforce right now, so I'm going to extend my time in university and, get another degree. But especially with a MFA, it's all purpose designed.
Yeah, yeah.
MFA is designed to focus your skills in a specific area. And I knew I wanted to study directing.
Yeah.
And so started looking for programs that fit my criteria in the end.
Right.
And my criteria was pretty specific and kind of a high bar, because I wanted to come out of school with no debt. I wanted to have some teaching experience. Mm-hmm. I wanted to have a decent cost of living so that whatever stipend I was making would go far. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be able to direct professionally while I was in grad school. And that is a really important asterisk on that item.
Sure.
Because a lot of programs, master's degree programs, especially in directing, they're looking to train you in a certain style or a certain set of skills or a certain set of expectations. Yeah. And I had already been working in the business and had worked a lot with a lot of different directors. And I could feel what my voice was inside.
Yes, yes,
so
yes.
I didn't need somebody to show me what my voice was. I needed the time to just experiment, play, try some things, fail, then come out certain of what I was able to do.
Very smart. So does such a program exist? It sounds like a unicorn.
It did for me. It really did for me. No one person, I think, has the same kind of needs. But for me, it was at University of Memphis. Mm-hmm. And it happened that the combination of faculty there was like the unicorn faculty for me.
Sure.
I had two mentors throughout my time there. One who was an expert in narrative theater, which is very, story driven and symbolically motivated and gestural. And the other one who was, very much a director's director and script analysis and how you take that and bring that to life in the world. So we had these two very different styles, but that were exactly what I wanted to immerse myself in.
Yes.
Yeah. And their Playhouse on the Square operates in Memphis, Tennessee, and they run three stages, now four, I think.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, great. There's going to be an opportunity to direct there or at one of the community theaters in town.
Sure.
I was okay with that because most of them paid their directing positions.
Oh, good.
So, nice. Cost of living, check.
Check.
Tuition waiver, check.
Yep.
Stipend while I'm there, check.
Yep.
Teaching opportunities, check, and directing opportunities. And it's a program that I am really excited about and what I'm going to learn while I'm there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a no-brainer.
Exactly. I've been blessed to have some really amazing mentors. And one of the best pieces of advice I got from a mentor in undergraduate school was when you go to grad school, you don't want to learn from what you've been told. You want to learn what from what you've truly experienced, you know? So that's an argument every time, I think, to go from undergrad to some level of professional work and forever, however long you wish, and then go back. And there was a class I was in grad school. I'm sorry, this is about you, not me, but there's one specific instance where we had a guest who was supposed to show up and talk about, I forget what, Broadway set design or something like that. And he didn't show for whatever reason. And so my teachers were, it was a team talk class, and these three professors are up there going, well, what do y'all want to talk about? And none of my classmates said anything. And I just raised my hand and I said, I want to know how you do your taxes as an artist. Like, what can I write off? Like, this is boring stuff, but I was out there in the world and it's not easy, you know? So can I, this is back in the day, this is going to date me. I'm like, can I write off a video from Blockbuster? So, anyway, so really wise advice. So you were at Memphis for a few years. Was it a 3-year program?
It was a 3-year program, and I stayed an extra year and freelanced in Memphis, which was a little challenging, but I wound up doing a lot of things. I did some producing for the Roadhouse there. I directed a couple shows. I taught, did a little bit of everything, and then, you know, needed some health insurance. So, went back to stage managing for a little bit and moved to Portland, Oregon. And I was there for 4 years where I met my husband.
Oh, nice.
And so I worked as a stage manager at Portland Center Stage, hoping that I would be able to direct while I was in Portland. And that did not work out so well. No, it's just,
I'm going to apologize on behalf of the city of Portland.
I love my time there. Obviously I met my husband and I've kept him with me. So, so there was a lot of great things that came out of my time there, but it really reminded me how hard it is, especially for freelancers and for directors in particular to get noticed.
Yeah.
You're constantly in a catch-22. Well, we're not going to hire until you see, we've seen your work. But how can you see my work until somebody hires me?
Exactly.
So that is one thing that I am really trying to change in my community now is how I make those kinds of decisions and make those kinds of selections, because I know that frustration and the challenge. So having regular conversations with young artists and being able to talk with them about what they're interested in, what kind of stories they like, things like that. So I can get to know them in a different way than just seeing their work.
So Portland for 4 years and then
Portland for 4 years and then Florida for a year. My husband got a job in Florida. And at that time I was pregnant with our daughter. So I took a little downtime. I did a little bit of directing, but also a lot of self-reflection because nothing changes your world like bringing in a small human into it. So, so I said, okay, Wells, what are you going to do? Are you going to freelance for the rest of your life? Or are you going to get a real job?
I love that you call yourself by your last name. Okay, Wells. Like you're a football coach. Come on in here, Wells.
Well, in that moment, I needed to give myself some coaching.
I love it.
So I had started while I was in Portland, I had started a online certificate at University of Massachusetts Amherst in arts management, because one thing an MFA doesn't really give you is sort of the nuts and bolts of the administration side of running a theater company, working within creative economy, lobbying, all of those kinds of things that are a necessary part of our business. So I knew I wanted to enhance that part. It was cost effective for me to do it that way as a certificate. So I finished that while I was pregnant.
Wow.
And got my certificate.
Yes.
And, you know, building budgets and reading budgets and get to know Excel, friends, trying to think about all of those things and what convincing arguments are for the value of the arts. So I did that. And then after we had our daughter, I said, okay, I'm ready. I think I know where I need to go next, because I know where I want to end up. And where I thought I wanted to end up was as the artistic director or executive director of a performing arts center. It didn't have to solely be theater. Could be theater, dance, maybe the host space for a number of companies. And I thought that's where I want to go, because I love both curating and practicing in the creative side of things, but I'm also really good at this other side, which is the pragmatic, the business, the administration. So that's where we're going.
Yeah.
And my husband said, well, this wasn't the best fit down in Florida, so you guide us of where we're going next.
Sure.
I said, great, I've just had a baby. Sure. So I started looking, and we kind of narrowed it down to New York City or Houston, Texas, as places to kind of focus the search, because the country's big and there's a lot of opportunities out there. So I focused my search in those two places, Houston, because I had family there, and New York, because I had spent 10 years in New York and was like, we can rebuild the village. We'll be good. And Houston won. I was offered a job in the Community and Learning Department, formerly known as HGO Co. at Houston Grand Opera.
Yeah.
And my role was basically serving as the creative producer for the department, doing commission agreements for new operas, guiding those new operas through their production phase to realization, connecting the opera to the community, and really investing in this program called Song of Houston, where we wrote and told stories of contemporary Houstonian life. And it was really fascinating. It was absolutely wonderful. And I certainly went into that role with a list of things that I wanted to accomplish while I was there, because it was also my first full-time job.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Which I do remember this. And if Carlene listens to this, she'll probably laugh because she knows. But after I hung up with her and she offered me the job and I said, yes, that was my my boss. I hung up and I said, what have I done? I've gone from the freelance world to the full-time world. But it was great.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. As my hometown's Austin, Texas. So I have a little soft spot in my heart for Texas. Not as rich, I have to say, for those that don't know Houston Grand Opera, it's just world-renowned, top-notch opera company in Houston. So that's quite impressive that you were there, not just there, but there for quite a while.
Yeah, it was an interesting time. Hurricane Harvey.
Oh, right.
Yeah. COVID, the Great Freeze.
Were you using your daughter's bassinet for firewood? What did it come to?
Actually, we were very lucky. Our power only went off towards the end of the big shutdown.
Sure.
During the freeze, so we had, during COVID, like many people, we bought a small travel trailer, so we decamped to the travel trailer and turned on the heat. But then the power came back on, so we went back inside.
I think getting a travel trailer is actually a requirement to being a Texas citizen, if I'm not mistaken.
Kind of. Yeah, I think you might be right.
Either that or a bass boat. One of the two, I think, is important. But
or an ATV.
There you go. That's right.
It's one of three.
Yes. So after Houston Grand Opera, is that when the opportunity to run where you are now, run Human Race Theater Company? I have to say, it's quite impressive. I've known of Human Race Theater Company for quite a while, and as a sort of more Lort sort of League of Resident Theaters designer regionally, and you're just the fourth artistic director of that company, which is just kudos. So cool.
Yeah, thank you.
So tell thank us how you. That happened. How that did Ohio you know, was Ohio on your mind?
No. But I will say, I think, especially when you get to a certain point and you have a plan in mind for what you want your career to be, when you know that you have done all that you can do in a position and you have hit whatever internal goals you had for yourself while you were there, once that has been achieved, I think it's really important to listen to that and to know, okay, this is now a strategic time to move on because I have made the most out of this time. I am the best poised to be able to move to the next place. And I had reached that point at HGO. I loved my colleagues. I loved the work that I was doing. There were some leadership changes that were underway. And most of the projects that I was handling had come to their conclusion.
Yeah.
And we were kind of waiting to see what new directions the new leadership was going to take things in. And so I had hit my personal goals, which was seeing a world premiere commission from the signing of the commission agreement all the way through to production.
Yeah.
And I had done that a couple times over. I'd made some innovations and things like that. And the department had really made some innovations during that time. And so I knew it was time for me to go. And so I started looking and I thought, well, probably the next logical step in this path that I'm on is associate artistic director. Mm-hmm. So that's what I started looking for. Mm-hmm. And then
we know that's not how it went.
That's not how it went. So that's really honestly what I thought was going to happen next. And I had applied for a few things. And then Cappy Kilburn, who's the executive director here, she and I had met a few years ago during Directors Lab West, which was hosted out of Pasadena Playhouse. Mm-hmm. And she was running that set of activities and programs. And she had posted the job listing for artistic director of the Human Race Theater Company. This is one of two lightning bolt moments in my career. One was the job at HGO that in the job description, I felt like it might as well say, we're looking for Emily Wells, Wells, unicorn, please apply. And in fact, I use the word unicorn because they had you write in your application, they had you write like a catchphrase sentence or something like that. And I was like, I did it sort of like in a dating phrasing, which was a little weird, but I said something like unicorn creative and producer seeks same in new role or something like that.
For long walks on the beach.
For long walks on the beach and world premiere operas.
Nice.
So when I saw this job description, I had the same feeling.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Where
sometimes you just know, right? You just know.
This job might as well say, Emily, this is for you.
Wonderful.
So I reached out to Cappy and I said, hey, I think what I've been doing lately and who I am might be a really great fit. Mm-hmm. I never did this, by the way. In my freelance career, I was very bad at this part of things. Uh-huh. But because I saw the thing that I knew was destiny, I felt more comfortable putting myself out there and saying, I want this. We had an informal conversation. And at the end of that conversation, she said, Emily, please apply for this job.
Oh, wonderful.
And I did. And it was a very long 6 months to wait until the final round and the final decision by her and the board.
Wow. So. Wow. And you came on board in February of 2022. So two years ago, almost exactly.
That's right. Two years ago. The day after Christmas, 2021, I was offered the job.
Nice. What a lovely Christmas present.
I was out walking with my daughter, riding her bike down our street. Aww. When I got the phone call and I turned to her and I said, Celeste, mommy got the job. And she looked at me with these big, big eyes and she said, you got the job? like she knew exactly what it was.
Of course. Yeah. That's wonderful.
She had no idea that this was the fulfillment of, you know, nearly 30 years of
I think she knew in her heart that it meant a lot. Yeah. That's amazing.
I gave my notice at HGO and a month later I started remotely. We moved up a month after that. And
incredible.
Here we are.
There you are in Dayton, Ohio. Fantastic.
Who knew?
You actually provided a really great segue to something I'm curious what you think of. It is no small feat to be running a major theater company and being a mom. So, you know, what have you learned just in that journey? You only have one child, yes?
Only one. Yep. It is
Celeste. Yeah. Shout out to Celeste.
It is having a great partner. I can't do it without my husband who gets it. Mm-hmm. And understands, you're on show duty tonight. Great. We'll see you at 8:30 or whatever.
Right.
Having a really good calendar and being able to track all of those activities and doctor's appointments and
of course.
School is early dismissal this day. And, you know, after school care.
Of course.
There's a lot that goes into it, especially because we moved here without much of a net.
Right.
And theater tends to be family. But I try not to impose that, especially now as an artistic director. I don't want to impose on my staff, hey, can you do this for me?
Right.
Not cool.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's a juggling act for sure. And there are days when she comes into the office with me and she has some toys in the corner and mm-hmm. arts and crafts supplies and stuff like that. And she just has to hang out with mommy.
Yeah.
And she wants to be an artistic director when she grows up. So I guess I'm doing something right.
Yes. I love that. It's been such a delight to chat with you. I want to kind of circle back to the beginning, I guess, from the perspective of this podcast. And you said that the PAD taught you how to be a collaborator, and you've, as you've also said, seriously, you've not missed any work. You've not had work ever since you left Wash U. What about what you learned here might not only inspire students, but also kind of calm the nerves that maybe family members have for a student here that has decided to major or minor in drama?
So I think there's a few things. For me, certainly the well-roundedness of what I was expected to study within the theater department and outside of it made me, I hope, a good human. So that means that I can function in a wide variety of settings, talk about a wide variety of subject matters that maybe I wouldn't have otherwise felt as comfortable doing. I mean, I still remember taking Earth and Planetary Sciences and Women's Studies, and which is now Gender and Women's Studies.
Correct.
Anthropology. And all of this wide-ranging variety of classes that opened up my worldview, made me a compassionate listener. And those are things that are 100% part of collaboration. Because what we do in the arts is working together on a daily basis and trying to be the best listener that I can be every day, whether it's reading a script, whether it's talking to an artist or talking to a donor or a board member or one of my staff. My job is to listen and then be able to act on and respond to what it is that they're saying to me or sharing with me. And if I can't do that, then I'm doing them a disservice.
Sure.
So I think that is one of the biggest things, that having that sort of really rich educational ground with people who are leading in their field beyond my imagining. I mean, I always loved astronomy and Earth and Planetary Sciences. So being in that lecture hall in like basic, in the 101 class, for lack of a better word,
for sure,
was like, oh my gosh, you're a celebrity. So I think having that experience, I think the fact that at least while I was there, students were really encouraged to take on a variety of different roles. Mm-hmm. So the expectation was that you were on run crew for this show. Maybe you were in this show, or you were assistant stage managing or pushing the go button on the light board or running the follow spot or whatever, but that you were diving in with both feet and understanding how much of an ecosystem creating art is.
Yeah.
And that everybody has a necessary function to play, including the usher, including the person making the graphic design and things like that.
Sure. Oh, that's so good, because it is so true. It's such a holistic education here, and a BA versus a BFA, which is what we offer as a BA, I think just made you such a wonderfully successful director, stage manager, producer, you name it, at whatever stage of your career. And I, on behalf of myself and my colleagues, who many of whom you remember, I just want to say that thank you for taking the time to be on this podcast, but also thank you for echoing what we know in our hearts to be true, which is a drama major, a drama minor, or any involvement in drama is going to serve that student well. And it clearly has done so for you.
Yeah. I loved my time at Wash U. it was both of my university experiences were exactly what I needed when I needed them.
Nice. Nice. Wow. Well, great. Is there anything else that you'd like to share? I think I've covered everything on my pseudo agenda.
Oh, yeah.
What's that?
Talk about baby. No, I was thinking about this before and I hadn't found a way to talk about it. But one of the things that I found the faculty so good at is if you could make a case for why you needed to do something, they were 100% supportive and would, you know, make way and make space for you to do that thing. And I remember my senior year, I was in directing too, and Bill Whitaker was teaching that class. And we said, there were seven of us in the class, and we said, we'd really, really, really love to do like a more presentational showcase at the end of the semester. Can we please do it? like with lights and furniture from prop storage and sure, all of this sure. sort of stuff. And I remember Bill saying, well, if you can convince Rick Kuykendall, who is the lighting design professor and TD at the time, if you can convince him to let you use the space, then you can do it.
Nice.
I was like, all right, gang, let's go. We're going to do this. And so we came up with, okay, here's what the show, the running list of the program would be. This is baby producer Emily.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can hear it.
We're going to put together the run time. Here's going to be the name of the evening. We're going to print flyers. Here's where we're going to put them. We did it all. And we convinced Rick to let us use the space and hang some light and use some stuff out of stock.
Sure.
And so we did it.
Nice.
And I think, so I encourage you, students, current students, as well as prospective students, to really ask for what it is that you want and make a case for it and understand what it is that you're asking for and the responsibility you're asking the school, the faculty to give to you, and then live up to that. Because you're not letting yourself down, just like you're not letting them down. And I think we had such great, wonderfully challenging faculty that really waited to say that was good. Mm-hmm. And so we had to really build our own taste level and mechanisms to know inside when the work that we were doing was worthy of that.
Yeah.
So yeah. Don't be afraid. Just go for it.
That's great, great advice. I can't tell you how many times students much like you have blown me away, have impressed me so often. Like, I didn't know this was in them. I thought this was a biomedical engineering major, but look at how they can do X, Y, or Z. I didn't even know they had this in them. And that's really what I think teaching and mentoring is all about, is just having your students surprise you in the most wonderful, wonderful ways. So
absolutely.
So thank you for being one of those students before I was even here. But
thank you.
I'm sure Bill and Anna can remember those types of interactions with Emily Wells.
I'm sure they'll be like, what does she want now?
Well, I'm going to sign off by calling you by your last name, as you call yourself, Wells. Thank you so much for being on the PAD podcast and being one of our first guests ever. I'm still figuring out how to do this, and I have no clue how many people will be listening. And as I've said before, my colleagues in specifically sound and audio would be horrified that I'm around any kind of audio software. But here I am putting this thing together and hoping for the best. So thank you for indulging me.
Thank you for being such a gracious host. I appreciate it, Rob.
Well, thank you.
Go Bears.
Go Bears. Right,
thank
go
you
Bears.
To Emily Wells for joining the podcast. Very, very appreciative of her time. She is the artistic director of Human Race Theater Company in Dayton, Ohio. You can find her on LinkedIn and keep track of everything she's doing in the theater world. Until next time, thank you for joining the PAD pod.